think I'll look at it and go, you know, it's kind of, it's, you know, you chose this job for a reason. You wanted to do interesting things. It's pretty interesting.
I mentioned on the way in, there was an article on The Athletic I read on the way out, Victory Machine, the book that you wrote. As you think back at what you got to cover and who that group was, what do you find most interesting about the Victory Machine, about that group?
Well, first of all, Victory Machine, it's a quarantine dream, folks. Order it today on Amazon. Leave me a review. Let me get that plug in there really quickly.
Of course.
I think what I learned is that a lot of the ambition that allows you to have success is indivisible from what fractures that particular success. And with NBA teams, Scott, it seems like they end too early. That's what fascinates us about them. We don't talk about Shaq and Kobe playing so well together. We talk about the human drama and how the ego that fuels them winning those championships ends up undermining it. Same thing with the Warriors. All of that ambition, all of that wanting to crush everybody eventually makes it a little bit unstable in the way we never saw with that San Antonio Spurs team. So ultimate dominance eventually leads to fracture. But man, it's a hell of a ride on the way to that.
Yeah, it makes you understand why The Last Dance was The Last Dance, whether it made any sense to us then or even now looking back. Ethan, thanks, man. You're really good at what you do. Continue to enjoy all the stuff I read that you write. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
By the way, most likable guy in the industry, Rosh Markazi. Yes. Does anybody have an it? Yeah.
There is no like second place, maybe Doris. But yeah. I mean like Doris is, people just like Doris from afar. And Rosh is like, if you've interacted with him, you know.
And he's got a little bit of the most interesting man in the world quality.
Oh, he's got a lot of the most interesting man in the world going on. A lot,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Dude's a university professor, like a Vegas regular. He has definitely got a lot of those vibes going.
He just floats in different social scenes that you don't even know how he got in.
I saw an article that Plaschke wrote in the LA Times in like 1995, talking about the impact of the Rams and the Raiders both leaving LA, basically not having an NFL team. And Plaschke interviews two students from a local high school to see how kids would give a shit whether there is no NFL team or not. And the two students he interviewed were Rachel Bilson and Arash Markazi. Like, I've read the article. I was just like, what in the world? Like, it just seems so bizarre. Like, the CW, like, actress and this, you know, sports columnist, who, by the way, also used to work for Playboy. I don't know if you knew that one.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
I didn't know who Rachel Bilson was. I didn't know who she was either.
Oh, Rachel Bilson. She's like a, like, she had like a show on the CW, but she's like a, you know, one of those middling actresses, like a working actress, I guess I would call it. Like, she's headline shit.
Yeah. It's got to be tough to be middling. It's got to be tough to be middling in Hollywood.
Not at all, man.
You think?
It's quite the opposite.
I feel like you would always wonder where you stand, you know?
No, I mean, obviously you don't have the luxury. By the way, she was married to Hayden Christensen once upon a time.
Wait a second. I see pictures of her and Bill Hader. Are they together?
I did not expect it. Yeah. So Heart of Dixie was the name of that show, by the way. But when you're middling like her, it's perfect because it's kind of stressful. Like, yo, I got to keep working. I still like think about the next role, but you're making money. But at the same time, you can go to Trader Joe's and no one's going to bother you.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going back on it because I wrote a whole book about how fame makes people go insane. I think you want to be mid-tier.
You want to be – yeah. You want to be like reality, like pre-coaching the Warriors. You want to be Steve Kerr.
Oh, that's a good one.
Millions of dollars, but the guy has a normal life. Like he managed to give his family a somewhat normal life, right? Yeah, there's a bunch of guys like that. Like,
who is the ideal celebrity? What's the ideal level? Who is somebody you think of and go, man,
I kind of wish that was my status in the world. You can't say you. Or your favorite Donald Glover.
That's too much. See, Donald Glover is a level I don't want to be. I'm trying to think, who's that guy who's incredibly successful and yet can go most places and not be bothered? Because that's what it is. You want all the benefits of fame and none of the drawbacks.
Mm. You want to be able to get a reservation at any restaurant and not be chased by the paparazzi.
Yes. Like Charlie Day. I don't know Charlie Day. Charlie Day might be on the other end. Like he's too famous at this point.
Mm. That's a good one. I mean, you probably have a lot of idiots yelling catchphrases at you and milk steak whenever you go out into the world.
Yeah.
But you definitely don't want the other end of it. I was on a podcast. My friends talked about some interview with Leonardo DiCaprio where
it's too far. Yeah.
When he was a teenager, he describes it as, one day the paparazzi rolled up in their SUVs on my front lawn and they never left. I don't know. Was that Pablo? Maybe Pablo mentioned that. But that is such a way to put it. That really is that life changed and it never unchanged.
Yeah.
That was the reality from henceforth. But there's got to be somebody who squares that circle. There's got to be somebody he can get a reservation, you know, at any restaurant, and his life isn't hell. I think Steve maybe a little too famous, but that Steve is kind of in that sweet spot.
Steve is like this. Like coaching the Warriors has nudged it over the edge.
Yeah,
I think it's easier to find athletes, by the way, than it is to find actual celebrities. I guess I'd call it.
I mean, Steve Buscemi?
No, too famous. Way too recognizable. You got to have a forgettable face. Mm. Rachel Bilson has a forgettable face. She's pretty, but she's not like, I'll never forget that face again.
Mike Trout.
Mike Trout's perfect, but then Mike Trout's the other side is like not famous enough.
Not famous enough.
Can Mike Trout get if Mike Trout was in Miami, okay, probably in L.A., right? But if he's in Miami, you think he's getting a table? You're not getting a table.
Maybe if if the Marlins are recruiting him.
Mike Trout and me both go to 11. I guarantee I'm getting to 11 quicker than Mike Trout.
Oh, I like Cocky Amin. Yeah. I like this. These are hazardous times right now. I like to see it. I like to see it. That brings joy. That brings joy to me. I mean,
Is it a sense of normalcy? Do you feel like we've returned to normalcy when Amin is –
Yes, nature is healing is what that says. I mean, look, I want to know. I don't know if you get into it all, but I saw you embroiled in some social media controversy for
– Was I?
I a little bit. It's hard for me to know the scale of it. It had something to do with Kyrie Irving. It had something to do with Kendrick Perkins. That's as far as I know.
No, I mean, but here's the deal. Like 99% – again, shocker – I got some mentions. It wasn't that many in the grand scheme of things. Like I got flamed way harder for my jeans by way of comparison. I got a couple of mentions and like almost all of them were people who were Nets fans.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. If your fandom is what dictates how you feel about an issue that has nothing to do with your team. Then I look up. This is not a conversation we had. One guy said, "Oh, you needed Kendrick to make the point for you." I'm like, "No, it's his point. Because I'm very cognizant. I don't know how many other people do this when they're on TV, right, or on video. But I'm very aware of not trying to hog the spotlight, hog the mic, and most importantly, I never, never, ever want to be the one to usurp someone else's idea or someone else's point that they've made." Even if I agree with it and it perfectly formulates what's in my brain, if I'm on with that person, I always defer to the person to make the point. And the reason I do that is because I don't want them to be like, this motherfucker heard me talk about it and now he's making it his own. So that's why sometimes in that video, you hear me start it and then stop. Well, Perk, you go ahead and say it. That's not me not being able to say it. That's me saying I'm not going to usurp his point for him. That's his point to make.
Well, I want to get into the genesis of that controversy and I want to get into it. But first, Bill Burr, is that a good that a good level? Is that the right level?
I think Bill Burr in every other context fits. The problem with Bill Burr is he's so funny looking that you'll never forget. It's like would be the equivalent of if Rachel Bilson were like stunningly beautiful as opposed to just regular pretty. It's like her looks, Anna Kournikova, is too pretty to forget, regardless of how little she's actually accomplished, right? So Bill Burr is just too funny looking as a – he's kind of a ginger and he's got a bald head. He's got these beady little eyes. And it's like you may not know the name Bill Burr, but if that dude walks by, you recognize him.
By the way, I can't believe I dropped $20 on the King of Staten Island. I don't want to get too far afield. I don't want to digress too much. Bro, but I just wanted a movie experience. It was a new release. There are no theaters. It seemed rom-com-ish, so good to watch with the wife.
I read this article about Judd Apatow. This might have been 15 years ago. And ever since I read that article, I found it harder to enjoy his movies.
Oh.
I wish I could recall the article. It's not that Judd Apatow is like closet racist or whatever. But like many of his movies, and I enjoy many of his movies, right? Like I love Knocked Up and I love, 40-Year-Old Virgin. But many of his movies follow a kind of theme. And the theme is in the beginning, the main character is out of control. And by the end of it, they've calmed down and they've learned from their ways.
That's the King of Staten Island. Yes. Yeah. That's the thing.
And in this, in musically, how his movies go is early on, lots of hip hop.
I had no, no idea it was going to go this direction. Wait. Did he describe it as this? Like, look, I do a lot of just wild hip hop. Yes.
The person who wrote this critique pointed out like all the movies. The one I never forget, because that was the one like, oh, that's right, was Knocked Up. Because Knocked Up starts with like the
like Warner Brothers.
Oh, baby, I like you, bro. Right? And they're dancing around the pool like idiots or whatever. And then it ends with some like very like it starts with my nose, like one of those kind of like folky kind of songs or whatever. Right? And it instantly snapped into place, and I started thinking about every movie, and I'm like, oh man, it's so true. And I haven't, like, again, like I said, I haven't been able to look at, isn't he like an executive producer on Girls?
I mean, he definitely was the, he directed Trainwreck, which when you watch the beginning of King of Staten Island, that's the thing that he's, I think those were the two movies originally referenced is, oh, you have 40-Year-Old Virgin and Trainwreck. And I'm thinking, I don't think that's part of your oeuvre that people talk about Judd Apatow. No offense. I don't think people are going, oh, that's the guy that did that incredible Trainwreck movie. So strange that he claims it. I think he's just lost his fastball beyond the subtle musical racism.
He another show, by the way, that's been accused of being very racially tone deaf.
Well, there's something interesting there, though, because with Apatow, I see his successful movies as grounded in a kind of West Coast Jewish culture. You know, like that's the scene that he's
defining West Coast Jewish culture.
I mean, West Coast Jews. See it. If I'm looking at Knocked Up, that's just a bunch of West Coast Jews. Like West Coast Jewish slackers hanging around. Like that's what that movie is.
The potheads in the movie is what you're referring to.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that one is, but 40-Year-Old Virgin isn't that necessarily. 40-Year-Old Virgin is a whole different thing. I guess I would have to think about it more deeply. He doesn't actually have as many hits as you would think. He had those the Rise of the Bromance, and a lot of those guys, I think, went off and became successful in their own right. But it feels like he has more hits than I think he actually does, come to think of it.
He's got hits, dude. Like, because it all depends on what you define. Like, is it him directing or producing? Right?
Yeah.
He produced Anchorman, right? He produced a lot of these other Will Ferrell vehicles, right?
Yeah, he was a force. He was definitely – it was right before social media got huge, you know, right before it really locked into the hive mind, I think, around 2013, that he was just killing it. And I don't know what's happened since that point, but his stuff is just – it's shaggy. It's sloppy. It's the same formula, but it just doesn't have the punch.
I'm looking at his filmography.
Jade's gonna edit all of this out. It's such a. We'll get back to Kyrie, but you know.
Sorry. I just learned that Beethoven was black. It's true.
I was saying you're gonna edit it out because we are, you know, the customer, the listener is gonna go, this is not sports. They were talking about the filmography of Judd Apatow.
Do people ever do that?
Well, I don't know. Now pandemic rules are different, man. Like it's who even knows? Who even knows what people want? I'll say this much though, in my quick review of King of Staten Island, Pete Davidson can't carry a movie, and Bill Burr was excellent. Bill Burr is a good actor.
Bill Burr is so good, he spent a career shitting on Star Wars and then got a role on a Star Wars TV show and killed it. That's how good he is.
He's a good
Breaking
actor.
Breaking Bad, right?
Yep.
Bill Burr?
Yep. Yes, he was.
Pete Davidson is in that long list of like, I don't get the appeal.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Put him with Amy Schumer, put him with Dane Cook, put him with the now perhaps canceled Chris D'Elia. They all have the same, like, I don't get the appeal. They're just not funny.
Now I'm sensitive to this because I would never want to be critiqued in this sort of unsparing way. But hey, I have a responsibility to be honest to the customer. Pete Davidson, it's almost like Adam Sandler, but with tattooed and not as dynamic is kind of what it feels like to me.
You know what people like that feel like? Like to me, that is the ultimate example of white privilege.
Pete Davidson.
Those guys can ascend to the level.
Pete Davidson, whose father died on 9/11, the ultimate example.
White privilege is not going to save you from 9/11, but it can save you from having the type of career you should have, right? Like the heights that these people have ascended for basically being fairly forgettable / mediocre is pretty staggering, right? It's pretty staggering that like they will be propped up as much as they've been, but here it is.
Is Pete Davidson white?
Yeah, they make a lot of jokes about that, about like he looks weird enough that like you can apply him into different. Pete Davidson looks like Rami Malek after like a really, really bad bender.
I hadn't thought about that one, but that's a pretty good call as I'm looking at the pictures. And has dated. He's done a lot of dating, Pete Davidson has, as I can see as well.
They're drawn to the sadness.
He's brooding. You've got the tattoos. He's got a thing working for him, but he was not dynamic. He was not funny. The Apatow formula seems to have run out. It was not a good expenditure of $20, even if it gave you some.
That's how much it costs to do these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you think about it, they're trying to recoup some costs, man. They were expecting to be in the theaters and they can't be. And they got suckers like me who just want some new content right now.
Crazy. The strategy that Hollywood is employing to release movies versus like Marvel's Black Widow, they're like, fuck it, it comes out in 2021 now. Mm. Like it is pretty like staggering to see like who's rolling the dice on people stuck at home want to watch movies and who's saying, no. We're going to keep this a spectacle. We're not going to downgrade the spectacle. For you.
Yeah.
It's dry out there. I've exhausted the reserves. I'm looking for new stuff. If anybody wants to give us any suggestions about you should be watching this or you should be watching that, I'm completely all the way in on it because I'm giving my $20 to past his prime Judd Apatow and barely present Pete Davidson.
I have not paid for a single movie other than the bad movies I have to rent for Cinephobe sometimes. And even then we have deep conversations about like every once in a while, not all the time. Cinephobe, by the way, you can find it on the Count the Dings feed. Just go wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast, search Count the Dings and you'll find Cinephobe in there. And we've got all the great episodes where we review all the movies that you hate to admit that you love.
Hey guys, it's hot out there. Let me tell you, you want to be smelling your best. Smelling good is important. And Hawthorne smells really good. And getting Hawthorne cologne is easy. So you got Father's Day coming up. Great gift for your dad. Everyone likes their dad to smell good, let me tell you. You can actually go to hawthorne.co right now, take the quiz. That's hawthorne.co, not .com. And they'll help you kind of figure out the best scent for you. I used to wear cologne, and I actually liked it. I enjoyed smelling me smelling good. Take the quiz, and Hawthorne will tell you the two colognes that are best for you, one for work, one for play. Totally risk-free with free shipping and free returns. Check out Hawthorne at hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E and .co, not .com. Hawthorne.co, and use our promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. That's Hawthorne.co with the promo code ATHLETIC for 10% off your first purchase. Hawthorne.co.
People are running with it saying, people, we haven't written about it. We're like, that's what we're coming to you to ask you about. Okay?
And people like who then?
Well, it's all over the internet.
Do you look, is the internet real for you in your life? It's my life, right? It's two people talking, having a conversation. If this was a real world, would it be anybody else's business? But it's a video of somebody assuming what we're talking about, right?
I hear you.
Making an opinion about it. So why would I care about it? Well, why does that have an impact on my life? Why are you asking me those type of questions? About cooling it off? But what?
The reason we're asking,
I don't get it.
The reason we're asking about it is because two people, the fans, are interested.
Speaking of deep conversations, Kyrie Irving. Do you feel like there's something happening right here where he has a profound point in his quixotic campaign to derail the NBA postseason? Or do you think that there's too much layering of meaning onto what's happening? What's your take? If you're not deferring to Kendrick Perkins like a coward.
That hotbed of reality.
What's your take? Yeah,
exactly. So my thing has always been, we can have two conversations. We can have a conversation about the role of players by either playing or not playing in assisting and aiding the millions of citizens who are out in the streets protesting an unjust system. I think that's one conversation. I've taken to naming that the Avery Bradley conversation, because Avery Bradley represents to me someone with composed thoughts, with actionable items, with direction, with purpose. Or we can talk about the desire of people to be in the center of a spotlight in whatever fashion they can think of. Even if that fashion is nestled within an overall worthy cause. Mm. And to me, that's the Kyrie Irving conversation.
Are you saying that because Kyrie sort of came out of left field and didn't prep the players' union before he took the tack that he did, or is it something else that's making you reach that conclusion that there is a distinction between Irving and Bradley?
I say that as George Floyd was murdered May 25th, May 26th, 27, 28, 29, people are hitting the streets. By 30, 31, you've got NBA players taking prominent roles in these protests. Dennis Smith Jr., Lonnie Walker, Udonis Haslam, Jaylen Brown, right? They're out there. June 1, June 2, most of the teams have put out statements, some toothless, some meaty, right? All against the backdrop of the 22-team format being discussed by both the union and the league. The league ratifies on the 4th, send it over to the union. The union ratifies on the 5th, final vote 28-0 from the players' union, 28-0. So from the 26th of May all the way to June 5th, we're talking about roughly 11 days where the world is going crazy. And in those 11 days of discussions that are happening on a very regular basis, if not daily basis, if not multiple times a day basis in terms of these calls, Kyrie Irving was not moved one time to bring this up, to bring anything up, to be, hey, guys, hold on. I know where this format's one thing, but shouldn't we be talking about what's happening out here? If he did, and he was poo-pooed and shot down, he never turned around and organized a call with the other players saying, hey, guys, we need to talk about this. No, no, that didn't happen until the first call, I believe, was June 9th. To, it was the 9th or the 10th. And a smaller call with about 50 people on it. And that precipitated the larger call that happened on the 12th. And on the 12th, he rises a week after voting. Yeah, guys, let's play basketball. A week after that, now he's on a horse with his face painted like Mel Gibson talking about freedom. It's not about what his point is. It's about like how he's arrived to it. And when you factor in, you know yourself to be someone who is of eroded credibility, let's say.
What are the chances he knows that?
He has to know it. And if he doesn't know it, someone in his camp has to know it. You have eroded credibility. And most importantly, if your belief is, man, we need to bring about change, I sincerely want change, I can't let my eroded credibility get in that way. So I might introduce, I might organize this call. Ideally, it would have happened before you had a chance as a VP and as a player rep to make a difference. But so be it. Let's say he woke up on the 6th in the cold sweat because the ghost of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X came to him and told him what this is doing is wrong, Kyrie. Okay, I'm willing to buy that. But once you get the ball rolling, you have to understand, because of my eroded credibility, I cannot be the face of this movement. And if you care about the movement, then you won't care for a second about whether I'm the face or not. But if you care about being the face, getting the credit, being lauded, that's a different story. The other thing I might say, Ethan, not to go long, but when I talk about that first call, that earlier call on the night, the name LeBron James came up a hell of a lot of times out of that dude's mouth. So you tell me if he's really, really passionate about what's happening in this country, or is he passionate about being the anti-LeBron?
Damn. I mean, I think there's something interesting happening in general. I mean, there are a million interesting things happening in general. A, it feels impossible to have a reasonable conversation. I think that in part the COVID situation has turned the temperature up on the country. There's no pressure release. Nobody can go see Black Widow in the movie theater, in an air-conditioned movie theater, or just do any kind of recreation. You know, combined with the other events happening in the world, it's difficult, but this has been so with athletes for a while. It seems like we treat them with a lot of deference when it comes to activism and activist stances, but we also don't take them seriously. It's kind of like there's almost a tinge of, oh, this jock's really trying, is what it feels like. It almost comes with a little condescension. We don't often really go like, hey, what do you mean? What do you specifically want? It's almost like we run with the slogan of it, or we give somebody credit for trying or giving the appearance of taking a risk. We're not saying we're not necessarily, and maybe I missed it. I don't want to be unfair, but I do feel like there is a little bit of kid gloves. There is a little bit of tiptoeing and not going, okay, Kyrie or whoever else, you're really serious. Yeah. What do you specifically want? What's the objective? What's it going to be?
There's three things at play, right? Thing number one, as I said earlier, how many people are just fans of Kyrie? I love the way he dribbles. Ipso facto, I'm down for whatever the fuck this guy says, right? That's one. Two is the crush of people who, as you said, in an effort to make sure Black voices are heard, they are rushing to defend this Black voice because it's a Black voice they've heard of, as opposed to countless people who are way more educated on this, way more kind of like refined about this and have used their life. I'll give you an excellent example. Maya Moore, MVP of the league, one of the best players in that sport perhaps ever, walked away from it all at the peak of her career. The things that Kyrie is claiming I'm down to do, she actually did. She didn't have $200 million in the bank when she did it either. She didn't have a Pepsi deal. She didn't have a Nike deal. She didn't have two max contracts under her belt. She had good earnings, better than the average American, but definitely not. I can walk away and never
I just wanted this to turn into like a 15-minute monologue on the things Maya Moore didn't have when she sacrificed. Didn't have a 6-bedroom house. Didn't have a 7-bedroom house.
Didn't have the bathroom with the separate bidet, the separate.
No in-law unit at Maya Moore's house. None. None of which to speak.
Not in a gated community. No, but the point is, like,
Maya Moore doesn't have a boat. No boat.
You don't see Maya Moore jet skiing just to get to beat traffic down the East River.
She's not having a team catch a 300-pound marlin with Michael Jordan. That's the thing. I just miss laughing. I just miss laughing. It feels like everything is very tense. And
you need to hang out with more black people.
Apparently. I mean, nobody's hanging out in general right now. I mean, that's sort of the problem, or one of the many.
But anyways, the point being is, like, there's a group of people who just exist for the social media aspect of this. They don't exist for anything meaningful beyond that. It's the same reason why it's okay for a group of, you know, for the $200 million man to just be lashing out without an actual plan to articulate, other than I'm not the other guy. And meanwhile, you have a bunch of kids who haven't earned a dime to their names in Texas, basically say, this, or we ain't playing. We're not doing your booster events. We're not doing all. Like, think about how organized a bunch of college students who literally, like, 75% of them will probably have no career after this, after playing football at Texas. And the other 25% are going to a league where this kind of stuff is going to be held against you. Rather than right. Think of those are the risks that young men took.
NBA superstars and stars just have a level of leverage that we just don't see elsewhere. Right. Like elsewhere, it's like you're replaceable.
And so the important thing to understand here is that I'm not sitting here telling them that they should or shouldn't play. I don't know. Yeah. If I were a player, I don't know how I would feel.
Take the activist aspect out of it. If I have a large family and you're saying to me that I might spend months in a bubble, and I mean, what percentage of their salaries is it necessarily? I'm trying to think of what percentage the salary is, but I mean, it's defensible just to not do it because you don't want to do it. This is a crazy thing to ask.
That's a different – well, see, like, again, there is a significant portion of players, I believe, who are trepidatious about playing. But the reasons behind that trepidation are varied. There are some who are, you know, of the school of thought, like, we don't want to be a distraction. That's a real thing that some players are feeling. There are some who are like, I don't want to go because I'm not trying to catch COVID. Yeah. I don't think this is safe.
Yeah, Ingles' son has an immune issue. I can't remember what it is, but he would be particularly vulnerable. I think it would be understandable if he wanted to skip out on this.
Right. Another portion are saying, I don't want to go after not doing anything for 3 months and have a catastrophic injury happen to me and that impact my future earning potential. Right? There's at least three, if not more, schools of thought as to why not play, why to not play. Again, and all of those are legitimate reasons. I heard Stephen A. Smith go off on the players like, that's not the best way to protest or whatever. Hey, man, if that's what you feel, like that's the only way you can get your point across, who am I to tell you no or that ain't right or whatever?
Nobody knows.
If you literally, like, to me, what I say is, like, if you go to bed and you can't sleep because you're overracked with guilt, like, I can't believe we're playing these games and people are watching us instead of watching the news or whatever, like, I can't legislate your feelings on that. Like, I get it. I understand. My thing is, if this is the path that you want to walk down, you better be educated about all the things that come along with it. We don't do this path because it's an emotional whim. I'm going this way. You do it because, you know, I'm going this way. I know this might happen. I know there's this that's down this path. There are potholes. There are, like, Venus flytraps that are human size. Like, you know those things.
and you walk down that path with your eyes open, not kind of a wild pinata swing in that direction. And that's why I differentiate from people who are doing this to grab the megaphone and be the center of attention, and people who are actually committed to what this ideal is, right?
Then again, you know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. You know, maybe it requires people who don't consider the risks and don't consider the pratfalls. The Facebook motto of move fast and break things, I guess, is the modern version of that. I don't know. I have no idea.
But it does when you're involving other people. Because I'm not saying Kyrie Irving shouldn't sit out. Obviously, he's not going to play anyway. Because, by the way, another layer of insulation there. I'm not going. You weren't going to go anyway, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that is a relevant aspect that we have not brought up.
There's a difference between doing that and then rallying people behind you. And the people you're rallying, right? Because in essence, you're saying fools rush in where angels dare tread. But this isn't fools rushing in. This is a fool sending other fools to rush in.
Yeah.
He's insulated by
from Shrek, the John Lithgow villain. Farquaad, yeah, where many of you will die, but that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Exactly, right? So he's urging two-way players, 10-day players, guys on rookie scale, which is, yes, millions of dollars, but also I never have to work again and neither do my kids. That's like, all right, if my career ended today, like for instance, if I'm Lonzo Ball, my career ends today. I've made good money, yes. I'm going to have a job soon, unless I'm just a whiz on Wall Street, right, with the investments. For the most part, you know, you've got to get to the at least like $20 million made, put 20, 25, somewhere in that vicinity where you can start to say, never got to work again if I don't want to, right? So these are the young impressionable minds that he's sending out there without them realizing how this is going to impact them long term. Again, if they do know these things, they do understand these risks. They are, hey, man, I can't go to sleep at night, you know, knowing this is going on. I'm willing, like Maya Moore, to give up my career for this, even though I haven't made a ton of money doing it. Then, man, God bless y'all. Go ahead and do it. Be great examples. But do they know that? Or are they just following a dude who's hyping them up? Where he's taken care of. He's got a safety net.
If you're bored in the house, bored, why not spend some time on yourself? Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure you're well-groomed above and below the belt. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to shaving thanks to their Lawn Mower 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. While you are probably looking for new things to do at home, why not make manscaping part of your routine? It is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 precision engineered tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof, cordless, body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high performance anti chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC. Back to you, Ethan.
Well, this brings us to, I think, the next big question. So I don't know why, but I'm just more pessimistic than everybody I know on this. I see too many threats to it actually happening. I see the coronavirus cases spiking in Florida. I'm not a doctor, as we say so often on this podcast. But I look at that. I look at the political reality. I look at what's happening socially, and I think there are a variety of things that could go wrong to derail this. And to me, it shifts the probability against this happening. And so am I wrong about that? And the best argument, of course, is there's a at least $1 billion on the line.
Yeah.
But then again, so baseball had that too, and they still couldn't really get it off the ground like they thought.
So there's a couple of things. Baseball couldn't get off the ground because they try to do funny style. They want to go funny style, right? Instead of just saying, okay, we're going to do this. It's going to be shorter. We're going to prorate everything. You're saying, oh, we need some extra. Like, that's part of the whole point of being a business owner is you assume all the reward and all the risk. If this thing makes out after I paid everybody what they're owed, I'm going home with everything, right? Think of a record label, right? You sign the Jacksons to a deal and say, we'll pay you for this, 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 this. If the album sells, anything above $1 million, 1 million copies, we'll give you $1 million. They do that because if the album sells 300 million copies, they only cost them $1 million. They pay you that and they keep the rest. But if the album flops, then they flop. Baseball owners are trying to basically have their cake and eat it too. Right. Yep. They're trying to like get off on two different levels. One, I'm going to prorate you because we're all in this together. And also, I need a little bit more from you because you're in this by yourself and I'm not in this. Like you're at risk, but I'm not going to be at risk.
Yeah,
that's not happening in basketball. Right. So what's happening in basketball is from a financial standpoint, at least, I think we're all square. Everybody's square on how the money's going to work. The question becomes, what if I don't want to play? What if we don't, if the players don't want to play to the extent that you can't have this, right? So there's two things at play. One of them is obviously the money you're going to lose right now, over $1 billion for the players and over $1 billion for the owners. You can make the Garrett Temple, Austin Rivers argument that this is money that could be used to accomplish great things. Right. And that's why we should play.
Yeah. Better I have it than I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So
now I'm trying to remember where the money goes if it doesn't pay out. I'm trying to remember how it all works.
Well, it doesn't pay out because it doesn't come in. The whole point of them not being able to pay it out is because the revenue never came in.
Yeah.
So there's that, right? The other side of this is beyond this year, right? If you don't play, there is a very strong likelihood that the owners are going to tear up the CBA.
Force majeure.
And we're going to go into new CBA negotiations.
And this is not an ideal time. This is not a position of strength.
Yeah. Not a position of strength. And also, even if you are the strongest you've ever been, if you look at how these things go, do they go pro player or do they go pro management? The end agreement result.
Yeah. Here's when you don't want to be negotiating with owners at a time when the entire economy is frozen in a way, but weirdly, the stock market where they're heavily invested just happens to be doing relatively well. Like that's not a great time. That's not a great time to be negotiating with
them. But also even like just all else being equal, forget about a pandemic, forget about everything else. Just say this. When we look at CBA negotiations, have the deals been getting better for the players or better for management?
Better for management.
Especially we talk about the intention. Forget about like unintended consequences. Well, the intention was
better for management in the sense of as a percentage, but better for players over.
But that wasn't intended.
Yeah.
Right. So however good, quote unquote, it's been good for players, for instance, since 2011 with a 50-50 split roughly. Imagine all of this, the entire deal is exactly the same numbers of years and all that stuff. The only difference is I have changed it from 50% to 57%, which is where it was a decade, I guess, before, more than a decade. Yeah, like a little over a decade before, right? 57%. So however good they've had it, they could have had it better.
Yeah.
But they didn't because I'm not blaming them. I'm saying that's the reality of the collective bargaining agreement negotiations. They're at a
numbers disadvantage. It's easier to unite the small number of owners,
right? Sure, 30 versus 450. Yeah. But that's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is, regardless of how unintended consequences might end up helping us down the line, the reality is you walk into a negotiation asking for X, and you end up settling for 0.5X, 0.6X, right? Now, what ends up happening is the pie grew so exponentially that 0.6x, yeah, it's not so bad anymore, except when you compare it to what it would have been like if you had x. That's what I'm talking about. It, regardless of the unintended consequences, you wanted something and you walked out with something less than. So that's what's going to happen here. So
now I'm just thinking aloud, and maybe this is something I should have investigated, but if there's force majeure and there's the CBA, do you think that triggers a redoing of the broadcast deals? I'm trying to wrap my mind around that one.
You'd be a hell of an investigative reporter if you can find the TV deal document and find out where force majeure is written into that.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you one thing, the NBA, who has that power? If it's the NBA, they're not going to invoke that.
Yeah.
If it's the broadcasters, I think it would have been invoked by now.
Yeah. Yeah. The broadcasters would get a way better deal if it
Absolutely.
Was done again.
Absolutely. So, but anyways, the other part about force majeure that's kind of flying under the radar, I said this on The Jump the other day. Assuming a perfect world, everybody goes to Orlando, we play, everything's a massive success. Nobody got sick, ratings were great, etc. The owners still legally can invoke force majeure because games have been canceled. It's not all this. It's not the season got canceled. It's games being canceled because of an act of.
That would be such a great betrayal on October 21st. Well, like, aha, surprise. Even,
it's not a betrayal if they know it's coming. And that's the other part of this conversation that I don't know has been correctly been discussed about, is that it's coming. So you say, well, then if it's coming either way, why should we play? Because you go, you play, everybody gets paid, and the negotiation afterward is amicable. It still probably ends up screwing you more than the last deal did, as we just discussed. It always gets worse, but at least it's kind of like a gradual. You don't play, you don't get paid, but you also screw them out of the money. They're coming to that table looking for blood.
Yeah,
they are ready to make this deal look as awful as possible. And so you do it as a sign of good faith. Now, again, I cannot stress enough. This is not me advocating for them to play. This is me saying, if you're not going to play, understand that's where this road leads to.
And
if you're cool with it, then you're cool with it.
I think exploding league popularity is favorable terrain for players. And I think the waning league popularity, which might be a short-term trend, but it's been the last couple of years, I don't think this is favorable territory for players to try to exert maximum leverage. That's just my instinct on it. That's just how I've seen things tend to play out. But yeah, I think I'm with you on it, that you want it to be amicable. You want to recoup whatever you can recoup, because the other end of this, could be bad. Could be really bad, in terms of negotiating for the players. And I also don't think that there will be a tremendous amount of public sympathy. There's just way too much going on right now. Too many people are hurting financially to care about other people.
And even in the best of times, people don't care.
They don't.
Right? 1998, 1999, the economy was printing money.
Yeah.
The tech bubble was going great. Everybody's lives was awesome. NBA players got locked out, and the press called it a strike.
And that Patrick Ewing quote resonated and is the
They make money, but they spend a lot of money too.
Yeah, we might make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all people care about. They empathize with the billionaires and say, look at these spoiled millionaires, right? So you're always the sad history of this country.
But there's something else here too, where here's something that I've wondered about. How much does the PR battle even matter? Because they try to have this fight out in public between the owners and the players for our sympathy, but none of us are actually voting on it. I'm saying us, like fans, not media people, but like there's no voting on it. It's just between your two sides. So why are you trying so hard to win the public. It's the pressure. It's when you go to the grocery store or wherever you might go, and you know people recognize you because you've got the fame level of between a Steve Kerr and a Bill Burr, and they say something a bit snarky. That's the thing. Is that the idea?
I mean, the idea is that, you know, Ben Simmons walks into a grocery store, everybody knows who he is, and will probably express an opinion to him. Josh Harris, the owner of the Sixers, walks into the same grocery store. We know who the fuck that guy is.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to deal with those issues in the same way that the players do as they walk around. Again, the other thing is, as you mentioned earlier, 450 versus 30. It's a lot easier to keep 30 in line than to keep 450 in line, right? And again, the other thing is we have to acknowledge this. America has a really weird fetishization with the uber rich, with and with management, right? The fact that
in the post Moneyball era, I would say more so.
Oh, I'm talking about in general, buddy. I'm not talking about sports. There is, you know, Joe the Plumber is the exact example of fetishization of something that does not apply to you. Meanwhile, the thing that does apply to you, don't empathize with it. So no matter what the figures are when you're talking about sports, as we bring it back to basketball, the reality is, however pampered and spoiled and overpaid you think the players are, there's still a fraction of the money that the owners make. So why would you empathize with a billionaire? Why is it, oh, these people don't know how real people work, right? Yeah, and so the billionaires do? Come on, man.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a lot happening there. One of them is that they hate the players more, but they love the players more. They don't, for the most part, think about the owners. A lot of people are fans of their teams and have no idea who owns the team. I mean, that might even be most fans. You know, maybe you've got a guy like Mark Cuban where he's really out in front of it and he's doing his cameos on Billions and Entourage and what have you. But the average owner, I don't know if the average fan knows who the average owner is.
You're right. The average owner, as emphasis on average, right? Like Mark Cuban, not average because he puts himself out in the spotlight in a way that most owners don't, right? On the other hand, Robert Sarver, Jim Dolan, not average because through sheer incompetence, they've made themselves famous, right? But the reality is Gail Miller, Gail Benson, my man, is it Tony Ressler in Atlanta? Rich DeVos, even though the dude has a bunch of other things that should make Rich DeVos. I'm trying to think of other ownerships that nobody knows. Nobody knows who these, Mel Simon.
Yeah, right? You'd have to be deep into the
Larry nerd. Tenenbaum. You think that's a Wick Grousebeck? I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. You can count on one hand the famous owners who aren't famous for being incompetent. It's Steve Ballmer. It's Mark Cuban. It's Michael Jordan. Who else?
Maybe Joe Lacob makes the cut. I mean, not household name.
Yeah, but, you know. Warriors fans do, but like someone in like Atlanta probably doesn't. Right?
Joe would have to appear more in commercials, and he would have to appear in TV shows. He would really have to get on his Jerry Jones to get to that echelon.
Tillman Fertitta, maybe because of CNBC.
Yeah. Right? Because,
but again, that's a very, very small niche of basketball fans who also watch.
There is only one NBA owner who is a household name, and that is Michael Jordan.
Yes.
There's one. Yep. So you evade a lot of scrutiny. You evade a lot of criticism in the whole PR war of it. I want to get back to another thing, which is the bubble. I wrote about – I always love – talking about what once was your specialty, which is basketball ops. And I was talking to basketball ops staffers. It's a very strange time for them. They're finding out if they make the cut of the 35 people who are getting sent to the bubble. Most will not. And they realize that and they're bracing for it. I think that this is going to be almost underrated, just how hard it's going to be for teams to just try to run themselves and how unusual a situation it is. And I think what's interesting is going to be the political maneuvering of superstars having the leverage to get as many of their guys into that flock. And I think that's going to be an interesting push-pull dynamic, because I'm hearing things about, you know, Ben Simmons wants to bring his guy. Maybe somebody else in the Sixers wants to bring his guy, his trainer. And there are not a lot of those slots. So right. That's something that I'm interested to watch. Is there anything like that that you're interested to watch as you're seeing this memo come out and you're seeing reports on how teams are going to have to maneuver?
Yeah, so we did this on the Jet. We had a discussion about, like, how do you allot 35 spots. Now, two of those spots is actually 37. Two are mandatory: equipment manager and team security. So that's two off the top.
Maybe I'm naive, but do you really need the team security if you're in a bubble?
It's mandatory.
No, I know. But I'm just asking. Yeah, I know it's mandatory.
You do, because you don't know what kind of crazies are going to jump in. And so you want people who are knowledgeable of the assets they're protecting, right? They know these people, as opposed to random NBA security. Oh, we'll just bring our own security. And then I got to deal with, like, LeBron doesn't know that guy. How does he know he's – You got to have somebody in there. And remember, it's not Fort Knox. Like, people can get in, right? Yeah. Like, so you have to – some people authorized can get in and be overstepping bounds. Some people unauthorized can get in and obviously overstep bounds. So security is absolutely necessary. Equipment manager, absolutely necessary. I'd say two, but there's one that's mandatory by the league. So you have 35 spots left, right? So you got the players. You can bring 17. I talked to a couple of teams. They're saying they're probably going to bring less than 17 players, 16 or 15, right? So that gives you some wiggle room there. So we've got, out of the 37 spots, we've already counted – for, let's say right here, if you take the full 17, you've accounted for 19 already. So you have 18 remaining spots. You're going to bring your medical staff, your medical and training staff. That's usually about 5 to 6, 7 deep, right? Especially when you count masseuse, recovery, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can get up to 7 there. So say 7. So you got 7 and the 2 is 9. 9 and the 7 is 26, right? So now we have 11 spots remaining. You're going to bring your coaches, right? Head coach, your 3 assistant coaches. That's 4 right there. But then you also usually have 2 to 3 player development coaches, guys who are working with guys on the floor, whatever. They're going to go. So that's 7. 7 and 30, 26 is 33. So now you got 2 spots left. One of them is going to be a PR guy. Got to have a PR guy there to deal with the media and everything. One, so then the last spot is like a front office person. Now I talk to teams where the lead decision maker ain't going to go.
That's funny, right? Because I talked to teams where the GM is going to go, and the expectation was that most GMs – okay, here's how it was said to me. Most GMs are going to go, but maybe not for the entire time.
Right.
You know, they're going to have to leave, and they're going to have to do some GM stuff. Right. But one of the reasons why they might want to go is that if all the other GMs are going to be there – well, this is going to be like summer league, and this is where the deals are going
to
go down.
Sure, sure. But the reality is you're going to need to send – I think you're going to need to send somebody there, somebody who represents the front office. Maybe it's not the head guy. Maybe it's the GM. Maybe it's the assistant GM. Whoever it is, somebody's got to go. But the reality is, outside of those face-to-face interactions, which, again, are going to be limited anyway – based on all the rules of the bubble, that's what makes it not summer league, that you say, like, how much of my job can I legitimately do as a front office person from the safety of my home? Even if you're talking about, like, advanced scouts. You're like, oh, are they going to have scouts in there? No, because do all this off of tape.
Well, this is what I was saying in my article. In a weird way, I think the younger people on staff are going to be outside the bubble because they're just better at contributing value remotely. Right. You know, you're – Your old school coaches, they don't know how to do it any other way. In order for them to have some kind of value, they're going to have to be there.
Somebody was like, oh, you need 4 video coordinators. Like, yo, when I was a video coordinator, I was able to do it remotely. They absolutely can do it now. You're sitting in your video, or in your house, I guess. The videos come in, you're cutting it, and you're sending it. You're sending over the magic of the internet instantly. So even if they're looking for clips at halftime, now that'd be interesting about how communications work, because as you know, you're not allowed to have active phones to telecommunicate when you're on the bench. Are they going to change that, given that many of the support staff are not going to be local? So, for instance, you used to very gleefully marvel at the Warriors having their strength coach sprint into the locker room with the clips to give to the video guy so that he can have the clips ready.
Oh, look how you're portraying me. I just thought it was something that if fans knew this was how it worked.
You thought it was a competitive advantage. I was like, every team in the league.
I did not say the straw manning of me continues.
No, you were like, oh yeah, but they're using their guy and he's a strength coach, so he's fast. I'm like, Ethan, it's like, how much faster is he? You give it to the ball kid. The ball kid sprints, maybe not as fast as your strength coach, man. He gets there and it's enough time to get the clips done before the team is in the locker room.
I reject the premise of what you're saying, sir, but continue.
So anyways, so they do that because he can't just pick out his phone and say, hey, they want 414 in the second and 615 in the third and that, or 615 in the first, blah, blah, blah. That's why they have to have someone physically run back there. Are we going to loosen that up now, given that, like, hey, man, I'm leaving my video coordinator in Portland or in Memphis or whatever, so that can I text them so that they can text back?
I mean, I would not want to be making these decisions. That's number one.
No, everyone is a Pandora's box.
It's agonizing. It's like when you're trying to choose, not to bring up sore subjects, whom to invite to your wedding, you know, and that can cause a lot of discord. It can result in a lot of angst, a lot of hurt feelings.
Yeah. Whom to invite? Not the black people.
It was just family. Anyway. And Zach Harper. Anyway.
And the DJ.
Anyway. I just want to see – if stars get on each other's nerves or if there's any – because, you know, maybe I want my appetite for drama quenched, even if I complain that we do too much of it. I want to see some sort of issue with the 76ers because Ben Simmons got to bring X amount of guys, but maybe Joel Embiid didn't or vice versa. I want to see some of these things happen because it's very NBA if that happens. That would be very NBA.
I love what you said is what happens when you put 37 strangers picked to live on a campus, work together and have their lives taped. Find out what happens when people stop being polite and things start getting real.
But at least in the real world, they were not in charge of whatever the circumstances were. They're walking into the real world situation already perhaps with some resentments of who's here and how did they get here. It's because
to me, that's why honestly, the best way to do this is just to say, look, we're only bringing team personnel here. Like just to keep the peace, right? Now, obviously, if you're LeBron, you wield a bigger stick than, for instance, Ben Simmons does, right? Ben Simmons may not be able to flex like that. Just the simple fact that there's someone else on this team who is just as great, if not greater. And if we do it for him, we got to do it for you. We got to do it for him. And if we do that, then we don't have enough people to bring in here. Having said that, I've also heard the story of an NBA player a minimum NBA player who was cut, not because he wasn't good enough or anything like that, but because the team breakfast buffet was canceled, and the star player said, "Why are we canceling the breakfast?" "Oh, because it costs too much." And he said, basically, "Does he cost as much as that guy?" And that guy got cut, and the breakfast buffet lived on. So.
I'm reminded of the Charles Barkley story about the beer in the fridge that you once told.
Yeah. Man, we do whatever it takes. I'm glad you said that, Charles. We're going to get rid of all the alcohol and beer, not to be a temptation. It's like, Richard, it was nice knowing you. Like, real, man. Like, people are willing to bend over backward until they actually have to bend over backward.
Speaking of the real world, there's a really great parody called Sex House that was done by The Onion when they were doing digital content years ago, 2012, that Matt Kleinman, who you've met before, wrote for it, and it's pretty funny, and I feel like it's in your wheelhouse of humor, Amin. So that is the recommendation that I'm leaving you. I want my pessimism proved wrong. I want to be wrong. I really want to be wrong on this. I want basketball back. I am desperate for it. Obviously, I want it to happen safely. I don't want anything irresponsible to happen, but I miss it. I think it's fairly vital to our livelihoods as well, so that's also compelling me. So, and I will say this. I will say this. I give Adam Silver some guff. I have lobbed some criticisms at the NBA. If they pull this off and they actually make this work and it's a success, I mean, this is like 1,000 Elam endings. Like, I'll have to give it up to them. Like,
but I heard Brian Windhorst on Levitard today saying, worst case, Levitard asked, what's the worst case scenario? So, worst case scenario is one of the stars gets sick and, like, for whatever reason, the championship is tainted. And I said, no, that's not the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, somebody gets sick, infects somebody else, and that person dies. Not a non-player dies,
yeah.
A family member. Because then all the people who have their pom-poms out about, hooray, basketball, hooray, sports, hooray, normalcy, is like, how could you do this? This death is on your hands.
We will
how
play
could you
the
be
result.
So thoughtless? Absolutely. And that's
Kyrie was right.
Yeah, that's what I'm praying. I'm praying that whatever happens, we get out of this without any casualties in the most literal form of that question, of that statement. But the other thing I want to know, Ethan, is it's come to my attention. I was interviewing Malika Andrews yesterday on Hoopstreams, and we were having a laugh about the snitch hotline. And I said, what are you going to have people call and say, I saw LeBron and AD playing doubles ping pong? Like how much of that is actually going to enforce this? And she said, the snitch line is really for the more egregious violations, like, for instance, leaving the premises. And that's stuff that they can check and double check on to be able to enforce. And she said, so if you see like a GM or another player or a media member, and I bristled because I was like, oh, there's going to be media in this thing? I was not aware. And so Ethan, I set all that up to ask you, if asked by The Athletic, Ethan, you're one of our best writers. You have a way of like putting things in a big picture that we just don't have that much around. We want to send you to Orlando. We want you to be the voice of record of Adam Silver's Orlando experiment. What say you to that?
I have not conveyed any sense that I would.
Unprecedented. It won't happen again. I hope not anyway.
Love the color. Look at that. Wow. They do listen to the pod, so I'm going to chalk that one up.
You could write a book about it. I mean, you could, in theory, if that's what you wanted to do.
A guy over more time for once. No, the part that I don't understand, but do it somewhere else. You're in a bubble. You can't run around.
Despite everything happening in the news, the day-to-day life can be mundane in this situation. Now you're getting above 50%, I think. Just because life has been, in many ways, despite everything happening in the news, there's not going to be, a judge is not going to descend from the heavens and go, you are right, Ethan.
But most people aren't. Most people, when confronted with that, are so ashamed of how wrong they are that they seek to dig in harder. It's the reason why so many people, when you say Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, even though when someone says save them, this shit fucking happened, man. Like, they had a bunch of Nazis in Huntsville, Alabama, working at NASA. They do the cookouts and 4th of July and all that.
From the heavens and go, you are right, Ethan.
You are right, Ethan.
I just think that right now on Twitter and social media that everything is conflated of being on Team A or Team B or the good people versus the bad people. And it's not exactly an environment where you can say, yeah,
but I don't think it's, you know. Again, like, I can't count how many people where I feel like you, me, everyone I say this to, they all say the same thing. Fort Bragg is named after Braxton Bragg, was a Confederate general.
And the sooner y'all stop saying, this is Bossa Nova, Jade. Bossa Nova is.
Well, this whole thing's been Bossa Nova, which sucks because it sucks because I think that we just had one of the best podcasts on some of these issues, but. Oh, I gotta do the outro.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Amin, Jay just dropped a complete Bossa Nova, and we just had an incredible conversation, the likes of which we don't want to deal with the ramifications of. which is unfortunate. But maybe if people in these tough economic times send us a bunch of money on PayPal, we'll release it.
I never knew you were so passionate about the...
look, man. Look, it's
man, you better clean that up real quick right now.
Amin, as my dog barks in the background, thank you so much for coming by, our favorite guest. Thanks so much to Jade. Thanks so much to all of you, except for my dog who's barking in the background and screwing up the outro. Everybody stay safe out there. We shall return. Okay.